And away we go, hour number three of our radio program. That's right, Zach Gelb here with you on the Infinity Sports Network. Let's do this right now. Kellen Moore has filled the seventh job that was available, and that's the seventh and final job that was available in the coaching carousel this offseason. Raiders, Jets, Jaguars, Bears, Patriots, Saints, and Cowboys were the seven jobs available. Let's rank them 1 through 7. Who was the best hire? Who was the worst hire? So I'm actually going to start with the worst. I'll go 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Brian Schottenheimer is in at 7. You know, it's nothing against him. I just don't understand this hire. You had Mike McCarthy, who was a good coach, right? Won a Super Bowl, did some good things in Dallas, and you were willing to give him a 3-year extension. He wanted 5. You gave Brian Schottenheimer, who no other team would hire to be a head coach, a 4-year deal. Jerry Jones and Mike McCarthy, Mike McCarthy didn't get hired anywhere else. They couldn't find a way to meet in the middle, and Mike wouldn't take a 4-year extension, and the Cowboys wouldn't give Mike McCarthy a 4-year extension. So you bring in Brian Schottenheimer, who was your OC last year. So if McCarthy wasn't good enough, why would Schottenheimer be good enough? And I think this all comes down to power, and it comes down to control. And that's what Jerry Jones loves. He loves power, control, and drama. And he has all the power, all the control, and he also makes a hire. But Brian Schottenheimer isn't someone that, just based off his own, is a dramatic name. But hiring him to be the head coach of the Cowboys when he shouldn't be the head coach, that's going to create a lot of drama and a lot of crazy reactions from people. So Brian Schottenheimer, he's in at 7. I then put Kellen Moore in at 6. And the reason why I put Moore in front of Schottenheimer is I thought that Moore was going to be the next head football coach of the Dallas Cowboys. I think he has a higher ceiling than Brian Schottenheimer. I'm still not in love with this Kellen Moore hire. I thought that Kellen Moore 4 years ago, 5 years ago, people were telling me he's going to be a hot name to be a head coach. He's going to be head coach. He's going to be head coach. And he bounced around, right? Cowboys, Chargers, Eagles. Now, he just won a Super Bowl this past year with the Eagles. If I'm Kellen Moore, though, I think this move, him taking the Saints job, says two things. Number one, I think it says that Kellen Moore didn't have a ton of confidence that he was going to get a job in the next cycle. You know, and he would be one of those pick of the litter where he goes and has another good year with the Eagles, which, hey, the Eagles should be great once again next year. Maybe you could get a better job than the Saints. So maybe just taking this job, hey, you finally get offered one, you're going to go gobble it up and you're going to go snatch it. But if I'm him, I would have bet on myself and waited for a better job to become available. And also, the other thing to look for whenever this press conference happens is if Mickey Loomis says, he sits down and he goes, we got our guy from the start. That's just a lie. And there's no way Kellen Moore was their first option. But Kellen Moore, ultimately what he needs is a quarterback. Because, Stu, you know this. No one thought Dennis Allen, right, your BFF.
That's right.
Was going to be the long-term guy with the Saints when he replaced Sean Payton. You know, outside of Mickey Loomis, who tried to compare him to Bill Belichick this time last year, which was one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. And you know what? Mickey Loomis is another one of those GMs. Not only won a Super Bowl, but Mickey Loomis is another one of those guys. He has been there way too long. You know, how you look at Chris Greer, is still the GM with the Dolphins. That's stunning to me. How Mickey Loomis is still running the show with the Saints, that's stunning to me. Trent Baalke was going to be the guy until Liam Cohen just basically said, you know, Shad Khan, how do you like me now? I'm going to go back to Tampa Bay. Some of these GMs, they just are able to keep their jobs way longer than they should. Chris Ballard's another one with the Indianapolis Colts. He shouldn't be the general manager there anymore. But, you look at the Saints, they need a quarterback. And Kellen Moore, I don't think he has a ceiling of greatness. Can he be a fine head coach? I guess it's possible. But if they don't get a quarterback, Dennis Allen, who should not have been their head coach, and he's defensive-minded coach, I get it. Kellen Moore will suffer the same fate. That'll be there for 3 years or so, and then he'll be out. You got to ultimately get that quarterback. And the Saints, like, Derek Carr's fine, but he's not a franchise quarterback. You could do a lot worse than Derek Carr, but you could also do a lot better. And if Derek Carr is going to be their guy for the next 2-3 years, which I don't think he will be, he may not even be their quarterback next year, then the Saints are going to have Kellen Moore there, and then he's eventually going to get fired 3 years from now. You got to go get that next guy post Drew Brees. And you look at it, Drew Brees and Ben Roethlisberger, the Saints and the Steelers, I know it's easier said than done. They've never really been able to provide hope at the quarterback position since those guys have walked out of the organization. So Schottenheimer's in at 7 with the Cowboys. Kellen Moore in at 6 with the New Orleans Saints. Who dat say gonna beat them Saints? I keep on hearing that chant over and over after being in New Orleans for 9 days. In at number 5, this is where it gets tricky. I'm going to go Liam Cohen. Now, if you would have told me a month ago Liam Cohen would have been the head coach of the Jaguars, I would have said good hire. But the press conference, Duval, one of those things where I just wonder how he's going to relate to the players. Now, all those players of the Buccaneers, you know, they say they would die for pretty much Liam Cohen. But is Liam Cohen just a really good, young, innovative offensive mind that's good as an offensive coordinator? And even though Jacksonville's not a huge stage, it's still one of 32 jobs in the NFL. Like, it's not like being the coach of the Cowboys or the Giants, right? Or the Eagles, where the media pressure is just absolutely out of this world and the attention is just absolutely out of this world. And Jacksonville, I don't think they're that far off. Like, you look at that division, like, I don't think from winning a championship, they're very far off. But in terms of winning that AFC South crown again, I don't think they're that far off. You got a heck of a wide receiver. Let's see if Liam Cohen can bring out the best of Trevor Lawrence. And if that's the case, and he does, you know, could they compete with the Texans to win that division? Absolutely. But after seeing that press conference, I just wonder, is this a guy that's a player's coach? Yes. Is he a doormat? It seems like he could be a doormat. But then also, a lot of us thought Nick Sirianni was a doormat. Forget just last year. We thought Nick Sirianni was a doormat back in October. And he just beat the snot out of the Kansas City Chiefs to deliver the Eagles their second ever Super Bowl. So Schottenheimer 7, Moore 6, Liam Cohen in F5. I'm going Aaron Glenn in F4. And a big reason why I put Aaron Glenn in front of Liam Cohen, because I thought I was going to put Liam Cohen in front of Aaron Glenn. He just sounded the part, sounded the role. And the Jets need some order. The Jets need an authoritative voice. And they need someone that's a no-nonsense type of guy. And Aaron Glenn fits the mold. I'm not saying he's going to be great, but Aaron Glenn fits the mold of what a coach should be like in the year of 2025. Right? Player's coach, but not a doormat. Now, that's kind of my scale. Player's coach, but not a doormat. Robert Saleh was a player's coach. He was a doormat. So Aaron Glenn really kind of flexed his muscles. Because listen up, this is once again Diana Rossini on Aaron Rodgers meeting with the Jets. This is courtesy of our friends at the Scoop City podcast with Chase Daniel.
When they had conversations with Aaron Rodgers about what the future would look like, if you're going to be part of this team, you're going to attend all of the training camp. You're not going to do Pat McAfee interviews anymore. So they were really trying to change the way.
Wait, they said that?
Yeah. They had a conversation with him of, if you were to stay here, here's how we would want it to be. So this to me is Aaron Glenn getting control back.
So that's big. Now, I don't think Woody Johnson was thrilled from what you hear about the idea of Aaron Rodgers coming back. But I think Woody allowed Aaron Glenn and the new GM to make this decision. And I think Woody knew in the back of his mind, right, through these interview processes, when you let the new GM and the new head coach speak their mind, I think Woody realized, I don't have to really overvoice my opinion here if they knew they were going to hire Aaron Glenn. Because Woody said he was going to leave it up to the GM and the head coach. But Aaron Glenn must have said in his interview, I'm good with bringing Aaron back. I would like to have Aaron back, but he's got to do it our way or the highway. And once you say that with Aaron Rodgers, Woody probably sat there and go, okay, we'll be looking for a new quarterback. So I like the way that Aaron Glenn sounded at the press conference. And I like this first move, even though you could argue it's better for 2025 for Rodgers to be there. But I would still say for the Jets, I would just say rip the Band-Aid off now. Because even if you bring back Aaron Rodgers, if everything goes right, what do? You go to the playoffs and you lose wild card weekend. You know, maybe you win one playoff game at most. And I think that's even pushing it. So I like that you have a coach that's in control now. But ultimately, like I just said about Liam Cohen, or excuse me, about Kellen Moore, you got to go find the quarterback. And the Jets for the last 3-4 years, they've been stuck on, hey, good young roster, Quinnen Williams, Garrett Wilson, you know, Sauce Gardner. But if you don't eventually find that young quarterback or a quarterback period, A, you're not going to win a lot of games, but then B, you're going to have some of those young players get frustrated, especially in a high media market like New York, and they're going to want out. You've already had trade rumors with Garrett Wilson that he's already getting frustrated with everything that went down the last two seasons. In at number three, I'm going with Stu's team, the Raiders. I know that the Raiders wanted Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson got ooted out by Tom Brady, but ultimately said, the Raiders don't have a quarterback. I'll go to Chicago, and I'll go team up with Caleb Williams. But the Raiders, who don't have a lot to offer, like if you're talking about the Raiders, it's Max Crosby, it is Brock Bowers, and then everything else is really interchangeable. Like, yeah, Christian Wilkins is a good young player. Spillane's still there, right? The linebacker, he's good. But it's not as if the Raiders have these unmovable pieces. And even I'm not even going to say that Max Crosby isn't unmovable. Because with how bare that this team is and the cupboard, how bare it is, you know, you can make the case, go trade Max Crosby for two picks, you know, two first-round picks, and then you could really reset the foundation of your franchise. You know, I think the only untouchable player on the Raiders right now is Brock Bowers. And Brock Bowers, right, one of the best rookie seasons for any player that you'll ever see, period. But as I said with now Aaron Glenn, and as I said now with Kellen Moore, I could like this Pete Carroll hire because really the Raiders getting Pete Carroll, they outkicked their coverage. That's what they did. Now I get it. Pete's not going to be there for the long haul because he's up there in age. But if I would have told you a month ago when this search started that the Raiders could get Pete Carroll to be the head coach, I think everyone in Raider Nation would be like, okay, that's fine. He's a stopgap a little bit, but I don't mean that in a bad way because you need someone to get the culture and the foundation of the Raiders back, and they haven't had that in a while. So Pete Carroll, three to the Raiders. Here's where it gets tricky. Vrabel or Ben Johnson? And the tiebreaker for me is experience against inexperience. You look at Mike Vrabel, I know people go, oh, what did he really win? He had Ryan Tannehill as his quarterback. You know, he had some good defensive players, but you know, outside of Simmons, it's not as if they had these guys on defense that you're like oohing and ahhing over. Mike Vrabel, what he did with Tennessee is pretty damn good. One year he made the AFC Championship game, another year they were the number one seed in the AFC. And don't get me wrong, they did have A.J. Brown. They did have Derrick Henry. So you had two great players. But the rest of the team, I'm not saying there weren't other good players on the team, but it wasn't as if you had a plethora of household names. And I don't care who you are, when Ryan Tannehill is your quarterback and you get that success, and I know he's more of a defensive mind, Mike Vrabel, than offensive mind, even though he caught a bunch of touchdowns when he was playing. I think that experience is what I value the most. And Vrabel, you know, maybe outside of Dan Campbell, I don't know if there's a coach in the league that's more players coach but not a doormat. You know, I guess you could say Andy Reid, but Andy Reid's more from the older guard. Tomlin, you know, both Harbaughs you could talk about. But Mike Vrabel seems to be that perfect blend of, you know, played, far removed but not that far removed from playing. Really good conversations with his players. All of his players love him. He could still be demanding, but they respect him. But he also isn't demanding like how Belichick is demanding or Parcells is demanding. So I look at Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel, to me, is someone that is player's coach, not a doormat. And I look at Mike Vrabel also with the experience and what he did in Tennessee. I think he's number one in the hiring. And then it's Ben Johnson, too. But you can flip-flop those. Because those two were the crown jewels of this hiring cycle. It was Vrabel and Ben Johnson. Vrabel was the best experience name out there perceived once Belichick was off the board. And Vrabel's much younger than Pete Carroll. So I think Vrabel's a little bit more attractive than Pete. And for Ben Johnson, you know, people think, you know, he could be the next Bill Walsh. Like, I think that was Rex Ryan who said he could be Bill Walsh. That's how blown away he is with the offensive mind of Ben Johnson. But how many times have we seen head coaches that were offensive coordinators, they become head coaches, and they end up crap in the bed. You know, that's the only hesitation with Ben Johnson, is he just hasn't been a head coach before. And we don't know much about Ben Johnson. You know, we know what he did the last few years, but we don't know much about him personally, too. So I think that's the way that I rank those seven hires after giving it some thought. Vrabel 1 with the Pats, Ben Johnson 2 with the Bears, Pete Carroll, 3 with the Raiders. Aaron Glenn, 4th with the Jets. Liam Cohen, 5th with the Jaguars. Kellen Moore, 6th with the Saints. And then Brian Schottenheimer, 7th with the Dallas Cowboys. Who was the best hire of this cycle? Who was the worst? 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. We'll take a timeout. We'll come on back. News brief time next.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All righty, let's start off the news brief actually with Mark Cuban as he jokes with Bill Gates about the Luka Doncic trade.
I wanted to start off with a question because you've been in, you know, unique situations and maybe you can help. If after you left Microsoft, you found out that Steve Ballmer traded Windows 11, like the new hot operating system, for Windows 10, the Hall of Fame, but older operating system.
I might have to hide from the press.
I know a couple other people that are in that situation.
That's a good look for Mark Cuban. Now, he still owns 27% of the team, but that's Mark Cuban kind of marking his turf, saying, guys, this one's not on me. You can't, I would never do this. Heck, he even said before he would divorce his own wife first before trading Luka Doncic. And oh, this got to drive Mark Cuban crazy. Because even when something happens that you don't like, if you still have a stake in something, like for example, right, you work at a company, let's just say, and something goes on that you don't like, you try to be a good company guy still because you work for the company or you own part of the company, things like that. For Mark Cuban to basically go, yeah, 27% of the team, I'm not these idiots that ended up getting rid of Luka Doncic. Because that could go down as an all-time bad trade. Right now, it feels like an all-time bad trade. Luka Doncic continues his career trajectory, and you go to Los Angeles, right, and win championships. Not right now, but like post-LeBron, they could go win championships. Whew. This is going to be one that's going to be associated with just being a clown show and a bleep show, and Mark Cuban wanted no part of that. And Cuban used to be very popular. I think since the election, his stock has kind of taken a hit. And I think this is the first positive storyline I read about Mark Cuban in a while. And he's just kind of poking fun at what the Mavs did. Did you see last night on Twitter, Stu? They were kicking out Mavs fans.
I did see that.
For chanting fire Nico. Or if you said anything negative about Nico Harrison, they were kicking out Mavs fans. You can't do that. You made a trade. You guys were idiots. You guys were morons. You guys were dopes. So if fans are voicing their displeasure and they're just simply chanting fire Nico or basically sitting there saying the Mavericks are a bunch of morons, you're then going to go basically just spit in your fans' faces because they're annoyed with the dumb move that you made? You traded a guy that could go on to be a generational talent, a guy that got your team to the NBA Finals last year. So fans are upset. They're voicing how upset they are at the game. And you have security guards walking over and they're kicking you out. You know what that sounds like? Sounds like how Dolan used to be with the Knicks. You can't do that. Adam Silver's got to pick up the phone today and he's got to tell the Dallas Mavericks, stop being morons. You made your bed. Now lie in it. Oh, I couldn't believe. I thought that was The Onion. I thought that was fake news. I didn't think those were real tweets. I thought it was AI generated. I couldn't believe that you had people getting kicked out of the Mavericks game last night for what, just saying fire the GM? Or chanting how much they miss Luka Doncic? What a joke. The Mavericks went from being in the NBA Finals last year to still having a good team on paper. But once you trade Luka Doncic, and now AD's hurt, even before AD got hurt, once you traded him, you were stupid. You became a laughingstock. You just can't trade a player like that and get basically very little in return for that great player. And you can have all these conspiracy theories and everything, but what really annoys me, not only the trade, but the fact how much they're disrespecting their fans now for just voicing their opinions. You know what? I think we should go to a Mavericks game. We should go to a Mavericks game. We should chant Fire Nico and then try to see the Maverick security guard try to drag my tall, big 6'4 ass out of the building. I wouldn't do them any favors. What a disgrace. What a joke. Here is Kevin Durant. Was he disappointed he wasn't traded?
No, I always had a goal of just playing my contract out and seeing what happens. I can't focus on a year and a half down the line. I try to focus on the day ahead of me, and I know that'll be a topic. That's probably the most frustrating part about being in trade talks is that the microscope won't be on solely just me the rest of the season. And my body language, you know, how I speak to you guys after the games, you know, how I'm looking on the bench, that stuff would be magnified. Which sucks, but like I said, that's a part of the business I got to just deal with and accept. But if I keep the main thing, then that could be the main focus. You know, we turn around and play well, people focus on that.
Stu, 10 years from now, when Durant's, you know, been long retired, what do you think? Actually, let's go 20 years from now. How do you think we'll look back at Kevin Durant's career?
Kind of disappointing. I'm going to be kind of disappointed just to how, like, he
it's
moved around.
It's very Rodgers-like.
Yeah,
it that's is a lot of Rodgers-like. I just went with, sounds fine.
It is. And I know he won the two in Golden State. I don't take those away from him, but just the moving around so much, and I don't know, it's just like a sour taste. Like, he could have been a top 10 player of all time, for sure. I think we're going to think of him more of, like, the 20th best player of all time.
So, he's definitely in top 20. And you could argue he's top 15. You know, some could say he's top 10, but you know what is so damaging for his career? What's the first thing you think of? I want to see if you could get this. But it's the first thing I think of now with Kevin Durant, who, just like Rodgers, right? He's an all-time great, right? Easily a Hall of Famer. It won't even be a discussion. You know, I know he's won two championships, two finals MVPs. You look at for Aaron Rodgers, he won a Super Bowl and a Super Bowl MVP. But for Durant, what's the first thing you think about?
Honestly, the first thing I think about is the Nets drama and how that was so poorly orchestrated and how it ended and how he forced his way out of there. It was just kind of a complete mess.
Mine's Charles Barkley.
Oh, bus driver.
Yeah.
Bus rider.
That some people are bus drivers, others are just riding the bus, and KD's just riding the bus.
That's true.
That's something that sticks with him. And I don't know in terms of it's weird to call Chuck an analyst, but in any analysis that's ever occurred, if there's anything that just sticks in my brain more than that line that ended up being true. And it's wild, so you could be a top 20 player of all time and still, when you retire, because of your insecurities and how sensitive you were, where he should have just, you know what he should have done? Durant should have just said, bleep everybody. Because he made a bleep everybody move going to Golden State. And I'm one of the few people, I didn't really care when LeBron James went to the Heat. I just didn't like how he did it. And I didn't care that Kevin Durant went to the Warriors. But if you're going to play that role of a villain, embrace being the villain. And Kevin Durant didn't have the toughness to embrace being the villain because, right, he grew up in our era. That's social media era. And when you grow up with a phone in your hand, you could say, oh, yeah, I ignore the noise. But he wasn't able to ignore the noise with all the burners and just going back and forth with, like, irrelevant people as well. That's something I just don't get. So anyway, if I was Durant, I would have just accepted a trade back to the Warriors this year. But then it's kind of like you're going back and you took your ball and you ran back home. But I at this point, I'd rather have KD and Steph back together than KD on the Suns with that career just wasting away. All righty, let's go to T. Higgins. He's on Fox 19 in Cincinnati. Does he want to stay with the Bengals?
We all want to, you know, keep the core pieces what it is. You know, even with Mike Gesicki, you know what I mean? You know, that's a core piece as well. So, obviously, we want to build something here in Cincy, but it's not in my hands right now. So, I got to do what I need to do. Yeah. And if that's go to another team, and, you know, that's what happens.
Nothing against Mike Gesicki. But, hey, a good year. But core piece for the Bengals? When you think of core pieces, you think of Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and then Trey Hendrickson. Now, they let Jesse Bates walk away, and that really derailed their defense. On offense, if they let T. Higgins walk away, because of how great Joe Burrow is and how because of how great Ja'Marr Chase is, I don't think it's going to derail their offense. I could get why T. Higgins wants to stay. I could get why Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow want him to stay. But there's only so many mouths that you could feed. And Ja'Marr Chase's contract is going to be astronomical. You already gave Joe Burrow one of those big deals. If they're making Ja'Marr Chase wait, and they still haven't paid Ja'Marr Chase, I don't think that they're going to find a way here in the 11th hour to get a deal done with T. Higgins. So I expect T. Higgins to go somewhere else. Let's go to Cam Newton. This was on Overtime with Travis Hunter. So this is on Radio Row when Cam's interview, and I think it was Travis Hunter. And he gave advice to Travis Hunter about being the number one pick.
How did you handle the pressure of being the top pick?
Let's put it in perspective. You're the top pick because what?
Where you play.
No. You're looking at it from a personal situation. I'm talking about from the professional situation. You're the top pick because that was the worst team in the NFL the year before. For me, I wanted to be the number one pick. You could potentially be the first pick, but bro, you have no way of impacting the game like a quarterback does. You can lock down the number one receiver. You can make impact plays on offense all you want, but it's still not like a quarterback. My issue is when I was the first pick, I went into a locker room of losers. Guys didn't know how to win. Guys didn't know how to prepare. It was a culture shock for me. The games don't mean a lot to a lot of people in the league like you would expect. It's just money. Not everybody has capabilities to be impact players. They're just players.
So I understand when you get drafted, in most cases when you're number one overall pick, you're not going to an ideal destination. But Cam saying he was in a locker room full of losers, whew, that's rough. Steve Smith Sr. a loser? Because if Steve Smith Sr. is a loser, and I know Cam won a national championship in college, then Cam, you're a loser. Steve Smith didn't win a Super Bowl, but he made it to a Super Bowl, and he played great in that Super Bowl up against the Patriots. You know, is Greg Olsen a loser? Now, I'm going through it. Just those two players right away. Saying that that's a locker room full of losers, whew. I can understand why you had someone like Steve Smith really clap back. That's some good players in that organization. Thomas Davis, you have J.J. Jansen. You know, that's some good players on those teams. I'm telling you, if I'm one of those players that were on that team in Carolina, I'm not happy about that. Let's go to Jalen Hurts on overcoming adversity in his career.
There's a point where I realized that I could put a limit on myself, you know, if I had the right mentality and the right approach and the right effort. And so when you host those trophies, it's more so about the journey and less about the results.
And let's go to Nick Sirianni talking about Jalen Hurts.
We can prepare as coaches all we want and try to put him in position to succeed, but then it comes down to him recognizing the look from his film study all week and all 2 weeks in this case, and getting to the right play. So he did an unbelievable job of that yesterday.
So there you go, Nick Sirianni, Jalen Hurts from an Eagles perspective, right? That's how you're going to remember this Super Bowl, because it's just validation for the success of Nick Sirianni after many people, including myself, questioned him for Jalen Hurts. I think he's a top five quarterback in the NFL. Right now, when you think of five best quarterbacks in the NFL, in no order, Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, and then, obviously, Jalen Hurts as well with what he's been able to do twice in the Super Bowl and be able to win one, but he outplayed Mahomes both times. That's a news brief, 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. Let me squeeze in a call here. Forrest in Michigan, he is next up on the Infinity Sports Network with Zach Gelb. Forrest, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, Zach? When you guys were doing that coach comment about, yeah, like the coach, it was the Dan Campbell thing is, to me, he was only as good as his staff, and there's a lot of people here that agree with that. And, you know, he's still that guy from Miami when he was the intern, and then nobody, he didn't get it turned into a head coach then. And we're kind of getting tired of that crying at the podium. We want, like, you know, you've been a head coach for a few years now. Learn how to take a loss. Every time you tough loss, we're not as
Are you a Lions fan?
Yeah, I am. I'm a season ticket holder.
Okay, so let me just say two things. One, I agree with you in terms of the crying at the podium. Like, when he lost this year in the playoffs, I said, here come the Dan Campbell tears. I think they've moved past that point. I know that's who he is, but I would not have done that But saying getting tired of Dan Campbell, man.
No, not getting tired of him. No, we love his heart and everything.
Sure.
I'm getting tired of his tears. But we also think that he was only as good as his staff. So, like, we like this year when it comes along, because the first year when he when Ben Johnson wasn't the coordinator and then Aaron Glenn had to demote the DB coach.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was in shambles at a point in time. So you lose these key elements of our team. We still have those these players. So we're a little nervous.
But you know what was also said about Nick Sirianni who just won a Super Bowl? After they got to that Super Bowl and then last year they had that disaster, people said, oh, he was only as good as his coordinators when he lost Steichen and Gannon. And then a full year removed from that, he was able to win a Super Bowl. I think the Lions are in a good spot. I understand because you're so close, you never know how long this window is going to stay open. But they're one of the top five teams entering the NFL next season.
Yes, sir. Can I say one thing about that Philadelphia thing, though?
Yeah.
It's one thing about Sirianni that I don't think nobody else gets. He is so Philadelphia.
He is.
Like, nobody gets that. Like, I understand all the antics and all that, and those players are feeding off of that. And he is that city. It's like I feel like he's a – like, I know he's not from there and do all that, but it just feels like he is that city.
He's like Delco Dan. That like if you ever lived in Philly, you would get when people say, "Oh, he's a Delco Dan type of guy." You would think he's just a regular guy walking down the streets of Philly. But isn't that Dan? Like, doesn't Dan Campbell reflect the Lion fan? At least from afar, that's what I feel like.
I mean, we're not that dramatic, but we're passionate. We're that passionate, but we might not be that dramatic as him. And sometimes I just hope this year. We got to be more conservative and not as much gambles because we don't have all that bagging us up.
So let me just ask you this. On a scale of 1 to 10, your belief level in Dan Campbell is what? 1 being no belief, 10 being all the belief in the world.
I give him a 6.
Okay. Well, Forrest, I appreciate it. Thanks so much for making the phone call today. And I'm surprised he got some skepticism on Dan Campbell. I get it. The team was 15-2, and they absolutely laid an egg in the divisional round of the playoffs. They were terrible. And the defense, the injuries caught up to them. And offensively, in that game, they did not get off. You know, they got off to a little bit of a decent start right out of the gate. But that offense, Jared Goff, was just not good in that game. But before Dan Campbell, they were, you know, I don't want to sound like Cam here. But under Matt Patricia, they were a bunch of losers in Detroit. And Dan Campbell goes 3-13-1, 9-8, 12-5, 15-2. Now, I would give him a little bit of a longer leash here. And I'm not saying that they were calling for him to be fired, but they go into next year as what, the second-best team in the NFC? Even if you want to say, oh, the 49ers get back to form, at worst, the third-best team in the NFC. I don't have that many questions about Dan Campbell. And also, I'll defend the aggressiveness. Because I was in Philly when people used to slam Doug Peterson for his aggressiveness. They used to do a Stunad meter in Philadelphia, 97.5, the Fanatic, for Doug Peterson. And people wanted him gone. And Doug won a Super Bowl. He won that franchise, their first ever Super Bowl. In order to take a place to levels that they've never been, you need kind of a different coach that is going to be aggressive. And there's going to be a coach that you question. You go, I don't really know if he's the right guy. Because those are the types of coaches that they're so different that they take you then to places that you've never been there before. And I think the Lions, they got a three-year window here. And, you know, last year they didn't get the job done. You know, the 2 years ago it was kind of unexpected. They'd be in a conference championship game. You got to take advantage while you're there. This year they didn't get the job done even though they had a great regular season. You know, these next 2 years, you got to go find a way to win a championship. Because after that, then you just don't know how things play on out. But they got a good young nucleus. And they're built so well up front, too. Especially with that offensive line. That's one of the better offensive lines in football. You got Gibbs, you got St. Brown. So even if Goff's right, and 2 years from now you want to move on, that would be a very attractive destination. It really would be. All righty. We'll come on back. I want to share one thing on Patrick Mahomes because I saw something on the internet today that I just want to respond to. But let's get the latest update in first with Ack. If you support the Kansas City Chiefs, take my advice. You need to learn how to ignore the noise. And not every commentary is how the majority of us feel. Welcome back in. It is the Zach Gelb Show. So Mitchell Schwartz, who played for the Chiefs, he tweeted this out today. Someone is going to have to explain to me how a 29-year-old's legacy is tarnished because after the best 7 year start to a career and getting closer than anyone in history to winning 3 straight Super Bowls, one bad game from basically the entire team diminishes that legacy. Mitch, what are you reading on social media? What trolls are you taking seriously? No one's saying that Patrick Mahomes is now some bum. No one's saying that Patrick Mahomes is no longer one of the all-time great quarterbacks. But what people are saying is Patrick Mahomes in an enormous game, the Super Bowl, three-peat on the line. It's not just the team playing an entire bad game. He was awful, terrible, brutal. And two things can be true. Mahomes could have the worst game of his career, and he could also still be one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. But Chiefs fans were already saying, he's the GOAT. And when you're at that level and you're chasing still Montana and Brady, and I think right now Mahomes is the third greatest quarterback of all time, and with all that he's accomplished so far in his young career, which is more than most of us and most football players can even imagine, fair or not, and you're not going to win every year, it's Super Bowl or bust. And any year you don't win, you're going to get clowned for it, fair or not. That's just the reality of this situation. But who's saying that the legacy of Patrick Mahomes is tarnished? No one's saying that. He had a brutal Super Bowl. He had a horrible Super Bowl. It was the worst performance of his career. But I had a Chiefs fan behind me before the Zach Bond interception say, Zach, he's looking like Sam Darnold right now. Happy feet seeing ghosts. That's what the fan said to me. So does this game tarnish the legacy of Mahomes? No. But he had an opportunity to start to close that gap even more with Tom Brady. Because his next Super Bowl victory, even though it'll be the same amount as Montana, I do think he would move past in the annals of NFL history. He would move past Montana. But this idea that his legacy's tarnished, who's saying that, Mitch? Show me what serious person, not ass clown 3467 with the cat as their Twitter profile and has like 6 followers. Who's actually saying this? But he was brutal in the Super Bowl, Mahomes. And if you want all the praise, and right now everyone praises and genuflect to Mahomes in the good moments, yeah, there's going to be people that are going to be annoyed in the bad moments. But it's because he's so great. It's because he's already won all these championships, 3 of them, 3 Super Bowl MVPs. He's also, won 2 league MVPs, all before turning 30 years old. So you look at what Patrick Mahomes has done, it is remarkable, but we know who he's chasing. And they had a golden opportunity for Mahomes to finally have a trump card on Tom Brady. Because Brady could always say, hey, I got 7. Mahomes, how many you got? And maybe Mahomes one day gets 7. But until Mahomes gets 8, Brady will always have the tiebreaker too, because he could say, hey, Patrick, I beat you in the Super Bowl, and I also beat you in an AFC Championship game. And Mahomes even said that before as well. So for Mahomes, it's about how many championships he could get. And also, he had an ability here where if he eventually matches Tom or gets closer in striking distance to Tom, he could say, hey, I'm the only quarterback in the Super Bowl era, the only quarterback to win 3 in a row. But not only did he miss that opportunity, he was terrible. You know, you could argue that Mahomes, think about this. You could argue Patrick Mahomes was the worst player on the field in the Super Bowl. Imagine if I said to you before the Super Bowl, Patrick Mahomes would be the worst player on the field. It'd be inconceivable. I couldn't believe that. And now this is 2 Super Bowls up against Eagles. Now he won one of them, but he got outplayed in both of them by the other team's quarterback. And I know you could say, oh, the offensive line, he didn't even give them a chance. He didn't give them a chance. I've seen Brady with some bad offensive lines. The offensive line in 2014 was no good. Brady found a way still to beat the LOB and win a Super Bowl. So there are ways to win even when things aren't always at your best. But those two interceptions and getting strip sacked, it's inexcusable, but it doesn't mean Mahomes sucks. Like, Mitch, tarnish his legacy? People were calling him the GOAT before this game. At worst right now, he's the third best quarterback in the history of the league. Mitch, log off social media. Or you got to realize a lot of things that get sent your way are trolling. I would love to know what in particular Mitch Schwartz was bitching about, where he's like, someone is going to explain to me how a 29-year-old's legacy is tarnished because after the best seven-year start to a career and getting closer than anyone in history to winning three straight Super Bowls, one bad game from basically the entire team diminished that legacy. This is what happens when you're in the big boy club. This is what happens when you're in the dynasty club. You win, you throw it in everybody's face. But when you lose, people are going to throw it in your face. But no one's saying that Mahomes' legacy is now crap. That's just ridiculous. All righty, that will do it for our show on a Tuesday. We'll be back tomorrow. And looking forward to another show. Big thanks to Stu. Big thanks to Samter. Big thanks to Ack. Big thanks to each and every one of you. However you do listen or watch us, whether it's on one of your great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, SiriusXM Channel 375, the free Odyssey app, or streaming on YouTube. We'll talk tomorrow, folks. I'm Zach Gelb. Always give me a follow, Twitter, Instagram, at Zach Gelb, ZACHGELB. We will talk tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.